keep them for references. So. Okay.
Let's get some of the
best known for your back and neck.
Is that right?
Landscape folks.
I work for one.
Point back.
Well, so I mean, just suddenly the brown.
Okay.
And if you have a cloudy day or something, it's like the horizon just.
Do those folks do
nothing there, it all blends in. And
All of those folks have to do this. So
all take the test.
All take the test.
So there may be thousands of people.
I'd like to call the Jobs, Agriculture, and Rural Development Committee to order for Monday, March 11th. Thank you, members. We're starting a little bit late, but I apologize for that. First up, we have Senate File 550, Senator Marty. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate File 550, I do actually have an A1 amendment to the bill. And I'd love it if somebody would offer that. This is the first committee it's been in.
Okay, Senator Marty has the A1 author's amendment to get the bill in the shape he would like it. Senator Schmidt moves the A1 author's amendment. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. The motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. Senator Marty, to your bill.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, this is a simple bill. I don't think there will be any controversy after that amendment. It's to update the pesticide applicator education manuals and so on. There's 21 manuals, and some of them are dating back to 1996, 1994, and so on. And they're largely available only in paper, and so we want to get it all done electronically. It'll still be available this way. But sometimes some of the industries that use them want to make sure they can be more updated, more current than 15-year-old ones, because the laws have changed so much, the safety understandings and what has to be done, regulations have all changed, so we need them updated. I have Joe Spitzmuller from the Department of Agriculture to speak briefly to it, and then there's a witness from the industry who wanted to speak to it as well.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Joe Spitzmuller. I'm a manager with the Pesticide and Fertilizer Management Division at the Department of Agriculture. What the bill does, members of the committee, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, is it creates a path forward to a more frequent updating of our pesticide applicator manuals. I have some copies of manuals that if the committee would like to take a look at, I can pass these out. But the manuals are used as the basis to identify a scope of work for a particular category. There's manuals that are designed to identify basic applicator principles. So all applicators would need to know certain principles of application. And then there are manuals that would identify particular categories of use. Some of those categories of use, I think, are listed on your handout there, but they would include field crop, they would include turf and ornamentals, forestry, aquatic application. And one of the manuals I have there is for antimicrobial application. There's also a manual designed for farmers and private applicators. So the idea is to update manuals frequently. The department has identified some funding that we could work with to help in this cause. The department has a long-standing memorandum of understanding with the University of Minnesota Extension Service, and they are responsible for writing the manuals. The department uses the manuals as a basis to develop certification exams to qualify pesticide applicators, and that's what the bill identifies as a way for the department to work with the University of Minnesota and other institutions of higher learning to update the manuals and incorporate more technology into these manuals.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
And Mr. Chairman, and with the amendment, the department would take it out of existing funds. They have some funds available for this, and they think actually in the long run it may be cheaper and easier. It'll certainly be easier to update them quicker when they get them all up to date electronically and so on. I also have, is it Kathy?
Cassie
Larson.
I'm from the Interim Executive Director at the Minnesota Nursery and Landscape Association.
Ms. Larson, welcome to the committee.
MNLA represents 1,100 green industry member businesses, many of whom employ pesticide applicators. In fact, we offer educational programs that recertify nearly 500 pesticide applicators each year. And MNLA would like to offer our support for 550 because it has earned bipartisan support in the House. We hope it can do the same here in the Senate, and we believe that updating and digitizing the learning manuals will help with the accuracy and the speed and the timely information dissemination to our members. So thank you for the opportunity to be here, and happy to address any questions you might have for me.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Ms. Larson. I want to thank you, too, Senator Marty, for your work in this area. I think it's something that does need to be updated. Do members have any questions of Senator Marty or the testifiers? Senator Deems.
Could the gentleman that testified a little earlier from the Department of Ag, could you tell me how these changes are currently being paid for?
Mr. Smith-Mueller?
Updating the manuals?
Mr. Chair, Senator, currently the updating the manuals relies heavily on the money generated from the sale of the manuals. So currently manuals are offered for sale through the university, and the revenue generated from the sale of those manuals is the principal means of support for updating the manuals.
Senator Deems. Chair, follow-up. So when we take the money out of this fund, will there still be a charge for the manuals?
Mr. Smith-Mueller?
Mr. Chair, Senator, yes, I envision there would still be some charge for the manuals. The manuals are a very expensive process. The estimates for writing a manual from scratch that the university projects about $60,000 to create a manual from scratch. Not every manual is written from scratch, but they're a very expensive process. Even when they're adopted from other states, there's revisions and reconciliations with Minnesota statute.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions from members? And it was my intention to lay this bill on the table for possible inclusion, but after discussing it with council, I do believe it has to go to the Senator Tomasoni's Environment, Economic Development, Ag Budget Division. Is that correct, Mr. Knopf?
Mr. Chair, Senator, yeah, that's Marty. Fine. And if later on, you after it's through there, you want to marry it into the omnibus bill, that's fine as well.
Okay. Senator Schmidt, would you move that Senate file 550 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to the Committee on Finance? Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Thank you very much, Senator.
Thank you very much.
Next on the agenda, we have Senate File 845, Senator Schmidt, which is the Omnibus Agriculture Appropriations Bill. Senator Schmidt, whenever you're ready, proceed with Senate File 845.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. We have Senate File 845. This is the Department of Ag Appropriations Bill. We have a great presentation prepared for us today, and I'd like to give our testifiers an opportunity to get right into that. If you'll give us a moment here, we'll be ready.
That's not it right there. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Greta Gothier, Minnesota Department of Agriculture. Sorry, we had a minor technical difficulty there. I wanted to talk to you today about Senate File 845, the Omnibus Ags Appropriation Bill. The governor has recommended a 1% increase in the general fund for the Department of Agriculture, so basically it's a flat budget request. We get $62.6 million, and it breaks out into our four main activities, which have to do with protection services, the Agricultural Growth Research and Innovation Program, our Ag Marketing and Development Activities, and our agency services, which includes our pass-through grants. Today, Mr. Chairman, since you've asked us to only discuss the policy items from this bill, what I'd like to do, and Mr. Chairman, we do have handouts that will be here shortly. I apologize for that, Mr. Chairman. But if I could direct members' attention to page 10, section 6. And Mr. Chairman, I'm going to ask our budget director, Steve Ernest, to come up and explain this policy, the policy items in section 6 and section 7.
Okay. Mr. Ernest, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, Steve Ernest, Finance and Budget Director for the Department of Agriculture. Section 6 is an amendment to the agency's authority to receive and spend federal dollars. This is to allow us to accept the dollars from the federal government as they appropriate, as they spend them. The specific example that we've run into several times, which is just costs us time and money to process, is that some of our federal programs reimburse employees based on per diem. We are allowed to reimburse employees based on the cost specified in their individual contracts, bargaining agreements. What happens is we get a check sometimes larger than we can reimburse to the employee, so we either refund the difference back to the federal agency or just send it to the general fund. This is just asking for the authority to let the federal government use their funds as their programs allow. And then Section 7 is copying some language from the Department of Economic Development statute for promotional expenses. We conduct promotional activities for agricultural trade activities, and occasionally when we're conducting those activities overseas, there are situations where it's difficult for us to follow the encumbrance regulations through the state. This just gives us the authority to make those expenditures while we're over there. Say, for example, for food with a purchasing card, which is not generally allowed, and then document the need and follow through on it when we get back. And this is, like I said, just copying language out of Deeds statute.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ernst.
Mr. Chairman, if there are no questions on those, I'd like to move to our next policy item, which is starts on Section 8, page 11 of the bill, and this has to do with our a program you just heard about a little bit, is our commercial animal waste regulation or licensure. The department currently has a licensure program for commercial animal waste application, and at the request of industry, we have worked with the industry over the interim to expand this program to provide enhanced training and information educational opportunities for both site managers and applicators, as well as registration for companies. I'm going to turn it over to Joe Spitzmuller, who is the administrator of this program in our department.
Mr. Spitzmuller, welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Joe Spitzmuller. I'm with the, again, a manager with the Pesticide and Fertilizer Management Division of the department. What we're talking about here, Mr. Chair and members, is a bill that would revise and restructure the license for commercial animal waste technicians. These are the applicators who apply manure to the ground. They apply substantial amounts of manure. Estimates are that this group applies up to 75% of the manure that's commercially applied in southern Minnesota. It's a tremendous amount of product that they're putting on the ground. Has the potential for some environmental impacts. This bill, as Ms. Gauthier was saying, has two principal effects. One, it will ensure that all applicators are adequately trained. All applicators who are putting manure on the ground are adequately trained. And the department has some revenue. The program generates some revenue, which will enable the department to have a greater regulatory presence in this area. Industry came to us with this wish. They want this bill. In fact, I have letters of support and recommendation for approval from the industry, if you'd like to see those. They are looking to be viewed as professionals in their industry and in their communities. They are concerned about persons out there applying manure without training and without the proper licensure. So the idea is that this is a modest proposal to license two types of applicators and companies that employ manure applicators and to ensure that they are adequately trained. Previously, the program has been supported by general funds primarily. This proposal would increase the revenue stream from about $6,000 annually, which the current revenue stream, $6,000 annually, to about $40,000, which would allow us to work, create a framework for appropriate training and a regulatory presence, again, which the industry was interested in.
Thank you very much, Mr. Smith-Mueller. Are there any questions on that portion, or would you like to keep moving on? Ms. Gauthier?
Mr. Chairman, we can keep moving on if that is your wish. The next policy item that is a part of our base budget has to do with the Agricultural Growth, Research, and Innovation Program. This is the tails of the former Ethanol Producer Payment Program. As members may recall, the state created the Ethanol Producer Payment Program in order to foster the ethanol industry in Minnesota and rural economic development. The program was a huge success. And we, at the Department of Agriculture, sent out the final payments on this in the first year of the current biennium. The legislature appropriated $2.3 million to the Agricultural Growth Research and Education and Innovation Fund, or AGRI. And we also had about $600,000 in change from left over from the ethanol producer payments, which by statute goes into the AGRI fund. So this fiscal year, fiscal 13, the department did spend about $2.9 million on AGRI. Mr. Chairman, we do have I have Assistant Commissioner Charlie Poster here to present to us. I apologize again that our PowerPoint somehow did not end up here. We do have handouts on the way, but Mr. Poster can start us on this, and we will, when the handouts get here, we'll make sure that they're to you right away.
That's fine. Assistant Commissioner, you've had a busy day, and for members that don't know, the Department of Ag was in front of Senator Tomasoni's committee for the last 2.5 hours. So Senator Weber and Senator Herr and Senator Schmidt and I have heard this presentation. But with that, Assistant Commissioner, please feel free to go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'll try and paint a picture with words. So I'm just going to do a top-line overview. I've had the opportunity to talk with many of you about this program, and as Ms. Gauthier talked about, this is the legacy of the ethanol payment programs. Ethanol payment program, that funding has now gone into the Agricultural Growth, Research, and Innovation Fund, and I'll give kind of a top-line view of the items that we want to invest in. Statute 41A.12 gives the commissioner broad ability to invest in things that will further our agricultural economy. While it makes suggestions on things like the Livestock Investment Grant, the Next-Gen Energy Board, and blender pumps, it really grants some ability to issue grants, loans, and other forms of assistance that will further economic infrastructure activities in rural Minnesota. The Department of Agriculture, along with our partners in agriculture, the commodity organizations, AURI, our livestock and crop industry, have come up with a broad theme for the four areas to be invested. The first one is the Livestock Investment Grant. This is a grant program with the aim of expanding or allowing entry for new farmers into our $7 billion livestock industry. We want to keep investing in it, and we think this is an excellent opportunity. For every $1 that the Minnesota Department of Agriculture puts in, the private producer puts in $9. We've also seen incredible demand for this program. In the previous two rounds of administering this, we've seen applications outpace our ability to fund them 10 to 1. As Greta talked about in this most recent round, for $1 million in available investment, we had $6.7 million in requests. So that's a general overview of the livestock investment grant. Next is the value-added business grant. This is aimed at the original intent of the ethanol program. How can we add value to Minnesota's crops and commodities and livestock that we grow? So this, again, would be aimed at people who want to get into ag business and also expand businesses that currently exist. It's a grant program that would help with, in the first phase, business planning, feasibility studies, market planning, succession planning. And if that business has already done much of that work, we would help with grants for actual commercialization of their business, including things like capital investments of building or equipment purchases. And that, again, is aimed at adding value to Minnesota's small ag businesses. The third area of investment that we've aimed at is farm to school. We think there's an excellent opportunity in conjunction with legislation at the federal level, the Healthy Hunger-Free Kids Act, that states that schools have to purchase more fruits and vegetables. We think that those fruits and vegetables, in addition to meats, dairy, and whole grains, can be purchased right here in Minnesota. So rather than spending our local property tax dollars out of state, we would use those dollars right in their home community. So first, we would help schools with much of the planning that needs to be done to address what's available in their own community and if it fits their school budget. The second piece is helping them address some of the barriers to actually processing and cooking that food. I'm very pleased to say that Blue Cross Blue Shield also thinks this is an excellent opportunity and has put forth $125,000 to offset some of the school's cost in implementing this program. The fourth area of investment is the renewable energy grants through the Next Gen Energy Board. Again, this is in line with the original intent of the ethanol payment program, making sure that we take advantage of the need for biofuels moving forward by having both the feedstocks grown here and the fuels processed here. So that's a very top-line view of the areas of investment for Agri, and I'd be happy to stand for any questions.
Thank you very much, Assistant Commissioner. Any questions on that part? Senator Bonhoff and Senator Dave. Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Poster. With regard to the farm to school, this is something we've been interested in for a long time. Can you tell us, or do you know, how many districts currently are participating in that program? And with this increased investment, how many would be, and what the reaction has been, and how you're communicating that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonhoff, I believe the number is 145 school districts today in the most recent survey say that they do some sort of farm to school. An example is almost every school that gets into this starts with apples. It needs a small amount of processing. Also, you can get a fair value if you have an orchard in your area. Looking forward, it's hard to project exactly how many schools will partake in it, but the reaction has been overwhelmingly positive. We've worked with the Minnesota School Nutritionist Association. There's a farm-to-school leadership board at the state level that we've engaged in, and I think that as this round a farm-to-school grant closes, we're going to see a lot of interest throughout the state in this area.
Mr. Chair, so I missed, and I know this isn't the fiscal note, but just for curiosity, how much are you proposing to make available to school districts for this?
Assistant Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Senator, our plan is $1.5 million per year over the next 2 years.
Wonderful. Good, thanks.
Thank you very much. It is an exciting program.
Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Gauthier.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. If I may, now that the handouts are here, we do have fact sheets on both Agri and our commercial waste, both of our budget items. Mm-hmm. Once again, Agri is part of our base, and the commercial animal waste applicators license revision is a fee in the Ag fund.
Thank you very much for that clarification.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And thank you for the handouts, members. I think you all have those now. Senator Dames.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Poster, could you tell me how the Agri funds were spent in the last biennium?
Assistant Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Senator, we had almost $2.9 million available in funding in the last fiscal year. We did not do next-gen grants in the last fiscal year, so we split the money largely between the three existing areas of livestock and investment grant program, value-added egg business, and farm-to-school.
Could you give me a little thank you, Mr. Chair. Follow-up, could you give me a little insight on the value-added, how that money was spent in that area?
Assistant Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Senator, in the first round, we had $400,000 available for funding, and we had $1.4 million in grants requested. I'd be happy to get you a list of the actual applications and the ones that are funded. To step back a little bit, all of these programs are funded on a competitive merit-based system. So after the applications are received by the Department of Agriculture, we have both an internal team from the Department of Agriculture score them and an external team with expertise in that area. And the top, the applications with the best scores get funded. But I'd be happy to provide you a list of the current fund, the applications who are funded this round.
I would appreciate if you'd give me that list. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Dames, and thank you, Assistant Commissioner.
Mr. Chair?
Oh, I'm sorry, Senator Weber.
Yeah, thank you. Just a quick question for the witnesses. I noticed that there was the section that talked about the Next Gen Energy Board making recommendations. And in last year's legislation, it said it shall. This year it said they may. Is there any distinction between that, not to get too technical with wordage here, but I understand it is important in the legislature.
Senator Weber, can you show us where you're looking at?
Yeah. Well, in page 6 of last year's bill, or last biennium's bill, it was page 6, line 28. And I'm assuming that we're talking about the same thing here. And this year it's page 5, line 6. It said that the Next Gen Energy Board established Minnesota statutes, et cetera, shall make recommendations. And up there it says in the current proposed legislation says it may.
Senator Weber, maybe a council can help a little bit.
Mr. Chair and Senator Weber, if you look on 5.6 to 5.7, that's just how the agency is going to split up the money. This allows them to put money towards this. If you look on 5.9,
okay.
It says for these, they'll show the same language as.
Thank you.
2 years
Thank
ago.
You, Mr. Is Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, you bet.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, though, that is. That concludes our presentation of the policy items located in our budget bill.
Okay. Thank you very much. Do members have further questions? I just thought it was important for us to look at this today. Obviously, Senator Tomasoni's committee has the budget portion of agriculture within there, but we wanted to make sure that members had a good idea of what was going on here with the policy, and a lot of times there are some carryover there. So,
Mr.
Senator
Chair,
Dames.
Yeah, I do have some questions for Ms. Gauthier. Last year in the bill, we had provisions there in there providing some funding for the retail food handlers inspections and anhydrous ammonia oversight. Maybe I've just missed it, but can you tell me where it's in the bill this year?
Ms. Gauthier?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Senator Dames. Yes, I can speak to those, and I also have Greg Buzicki here who can speak to the anhydrous one. But I'll take the retail food handlers item first. So for background for other members and new members, last biennium, so in the 2011 legislative session, the department requested a fee increase for retail food handler inspections. And in lieu of an increase, the legislature made a one-time appropriation of $490,000 to the department. And the directive with that money was that we improve our inspection rate on the high-risk facilities. There are three categories of facilities under food inspection: high, medium, and low. The high-risk facilities, by statute, have to be inspected once a year. We were current in only about 55% of those at the beginning of the current biennium. We are now current in 70% of those. We think that, and to point out, too, that it takes us about 15 to 18 months to train each inspector. So we've made an improvement from 55% current to 70% current with the two new inspectors we've brought on board, and they've only been working at full strength, if you will, for about 6 months. So we feel fairly confident that we will be able to move forward with our high-risk inspections in our high-risk facilities and get those caught up completely. So that is why the governor did not want to put a fee increase for retail food inspections in this budget. As for anhydrous ammonia, I'm going to bring Mr. Buzicki up to talk to you about that.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Greg Buzicki. I'm the Division Director for Pesticide Fertilizer Management. Last biennium, we did ask for a fee increase on anhydrous ammonia. And instead of getting a fee increase, we received a one-time general fund appropriation. We've used those dollars to increase our inspection rate. We have decreased our inspection rate down to once every 3 years. And in addition to that, we also have a provision in which we are going to develop rules for the development of rules that would allow for certification for private inspection of anhydrous ammonia. It did take some time to get that person on board. That person is on board. We have begun development of those rules, and we're proceeding with that as we speak.
Mr. Chairman, if I may add, about 2% of the funding for our pesticide and fertilizer activities comes out of the general fund. Okay. Most of it is in the ag fund and fee-based, which is another reason you don't see it here.
Thank you for your response. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your response. I am glad to hear that your inspection ratios went up and that it's working and that's going. A couple other questions for you. Last year, the federal organic cost-sharing program, if they received a grant from the federal, they were not able to get one from the state. Are we going to allow them to get it both from the state and the federal this year? And will there be something in there so we don't have duplication and overlap?
Yes, Gathier, we see someone.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
That's fine. We'll get some help here.
I have, we have help here.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Paul Huguenin in the Ag Marketing and Development Division, which has the organic program there. The state cost share dollars that you refer to, there's only $10,000 per year in that on a state level, and so we don't actually use that. That wouldn't be enough to even begin to scratch the surface, so those aren't used for that. Those are used for implementation of the Organic Advisory Task Force and some other related educational activities for the organic program.
Mr. Huguenin. Senator Dames?
Thank you.
That's good. Okay. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have two questions. One is regarding the farm to school grants, and I'm not sure who might be able to answer that. I think those are great, and I'm just trying to see in the legislation here how funding for the farm to school grants compares in this budget compared to previous. And maybe you could just direct me to where that is, or just tell me.
Ms. Gauthier?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Senator Nelson. The farm-to-school grant program that we are proposing for 14-15 through the Agri program is a new activity for our department. So the appropriation for Agri is on line 4.25 and 2.6. Bioenergy and value-added agriculture. Again, this is the tails from the ethanol producer payment. By statute, those tails rolled into the Agri fund, and the Agri statute says that it needs to be used for specific things, including rural economic development, and we feel that farm to school is a real opportunity there. There isn't rider language. The governor did not put that in the bill. But we do have a copy of our plan in your packet. It says fact sheet on the Agricultural Growth Research and Innovation program, and it's a two-page that gives you quite a bit of detail about what we're planning to do. This is based on our best estimates and projections of what we think the demand will be, based on our discussions with school districts and other stakeholders, and also with the interagency, inter-entity group that works on farm to school.
Senator Nelson.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Ms. Gauthier. So it looks like about $3 million is what your tip.
Ms. Gauthier.
Mr. Chairman, we're projecting that is what we will be doing, and that is the school side. And the farmer side of it would be coming through item number 3 in our plan, which is agriculture business development. So when we were projecting these amounts, we did quite a bit of research with school districts and also with the farm-to-school program, and we're trying to address both the demand and the supply side of the issue. So the demand, of course, would be the school district's demand for the fresh fruits, vegetables, dairy, meat, et cetera, and the supply would be the farmers being able to aggregate and distribute and also to be certified for food safety techniques, which is called Good Agriculture Practices Certification.
Thank you. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think that's a great use of leftover ethanol producer payments. So thank you very much. Now to my other question. It has to do with Section 4, lines 9.33 through 9.35. And basically, it has to do with bovine tuberculosis. I thought I remembered celebrating the fact that we had eradicated bovine tuberculosis. And so I'm wondering, why are we spending $5 million to eradicate it if we've already done so?
Ms. Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Senator Nelson. That is an error in the bill from when it went through the process at our sister agency, MMB, not to throw them under the bus, but it was an honest error. We've been working to remove it, and we will get that addressed. But you are right. The state is bovine TB free.
Thank you.
Senator Nelson, good catch.
I just remember celebrating this, you know. So I'm glad it didn't come back. All right. So my question then is, Mr. Chair, I'd like to offer an amendment to strike that language and reduce the appropriation by, looks like, whatever that is, $4.841 million.
Okay. Before that, Ms. Gauthier.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. So a little more background on this. When this language here and over on the next page, 10.1 through 10.8, that was actually from the 7.8 biennium, I believe, that language. It's very old. At that time, the Board of Animal Health, instead of getting about, as you see here, a little over about $10 million per biennium, the Board of Animal Health was getting $16 million per biennium, with additional funding having been appropriated specifically to deal with bovine tuberculosis, as you know, is a very, very serious issue. So this money was, the amount you see on line 9.33 was actually reduced out of the Board of Animal Health's budget. It was not in there the last biennium. It was taken, that cut was made in not 7.8, but 9.10, or I believe. And perhaps Mr. Knopf has more detail on that. So this is an inadvertently placed here, and if you were to remove $2.276 million, you would actually cut the base funding for the Board of Animal Health. In other words, this funding was put in as a special appropriation in 2007, and then it was taken out again later. And it got inadvertently, the language, put here. It doesn't belong here. But if you take it out and you cut the board by that amount, you'd be the board's already been reduced by that amount.
Senator Nelson, maybe Senate Counsel can help explain a little bit.
Yes, because I'm just wondering, why we're spending $4.8 million to eradicate something we've already eradicated.
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, You know, it's just a mistake. I don't know why I've got the – I have the 2011 laws here. We have no riders underneath the Board of Animal Health, and why they would bring back old riders from the past and put them in their recommendations is not something – but the amount that you have in here, the total amount, the $4.8 million each year, that's how much was appropriated 2 years ago to the Board of Animal Health. The riders, I think, were inadvertently added to the language here. Again, one of them goes back to 2007 and some of them in 2009. Since that time, the legislature, since these are base, the other two riders you'll see in there were base riders, there was no reason to keep those in there and to provide flexibility to the board to spend it on the problems as they see fit and need to spend the money on. So my understanding is there shouldn't have been any riders at all for the Board of Animal Health.
Sarah Nelson.
So my question isn't really so much about the riders. It's more about the money. So well, and I see it's so $4.8 million per each year in the biennium. So really we're talking, as you said, almost $10 million.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, that's their base funding. That is the base for the Board of Animal Health for all of their activities, the 4.8 per year. And that was the same amount that was appropriated in 2011 per year to the board.
Even after bovine?
Yeah, even after this was
eradicated.
That should have not. As I understand it, those are just in there in error.
Okay, so... is there some other – thank you, Mr. Chair. So I understand the importance of the Board of Animal Health. Is there some other disease on the horizon or I'm just curious how we – you know what? The reason I'm bringing this up is on the base funding piece is because whenever we ask a government to do something – and we add something, we always get slapped with another fiscal note. It's always whatever we ask to do, it's always, here's another fiscal note. We have to increase funding. And it looks like in this case, the Board of Animal Health did a great thing in maybe using their existing funding and were able to eradicate this disease. And so my question is, it just seems like if a task is completed and we've set aside money for it, then that money should be able to be reallocated maybe within the Board of Animal Health. But on the other hand, I would expect when we bring a piece of legislation that we would not always be told by a department, and I'm not saying the Board of Animal Health is it. Most of my experience has been with the Department of Education. They always say, well, we need more money for that. We need another fiscal note for that. And my point is I think departments should be able to reprioritize according to what needs are, not always saying we need another fiscal note or more funding.
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, Mr. Hart or Dr. Hartman is here and can probably talk to some specifics, but I do want to mention that the bovine TB money was one-time money. That does not show up in the agency's base. At least I don't remember that Senator Skoy had a major initiative back in the late 2000s to eradicate TB, and there was a lot of one-time money that flowed to the board for some of the cattle buyouts and things like that. If I remember right, this is probably just the remnant that they needed for the next year to finish up the project, and I don't know why it's in here. It doesn't make sense to be in here.
Dr. Hartman or... Sir, please state your name.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Micah Intermill. I'm an executive budget officer with MMB. Among my portfolio is the Board of Animal Health. The reason that the rider is in the bill before you is simply because I made an error. I was working off of a previous version of the bill. The rider language was never intended by anybody having to do with policy that it be in there. So this is terribly embarrassing for me. I am... embarrassed that it has MMB's name has gotten caught up in it, and I assure you there was nothing more to it than that.
Mr. Intermill, thank you for your honesty, and I know that you folks work really hard over there, so I appreciate that. Does that help you, Senator Nelson?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I wasn't looking for an apology at all. I'm looking to save $10 million.
And we appreciate that.
Senator Bonna.
Mr. Chair, and actually this is probably a question for Ms. Gauthier. Maybe Senator Schmidt, you can answer it, but... we've identified that there's approximately $20 million that's going to go into these grants, and we've listed these grants out on a handout, but they're nowhere in the bill.
Correct.
And so that seems like a significant amount of money with no corresponding language in the bill.
Ms. Gauthier?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Senator Bonoff. Thank you for that question. If you look at the handout at the top, we do include the statute. And the current statute under 41A.12 allows the commissioner to issue grants, loans, or other forms of financial assistance, and that eligible activities include, but are not limited to, livestock grants to livestock producers under the Livestock Investment Grant Program, bioenergy grants made by the NextGen Board, cost share grants for the installation of biofuel blender pumps, and financial assistance to support other rural economic infrastructure. So the statute was the guide in defining our plan. The statute also says that the commissioner shall do this. And so the reason you don't see it in rider language is because the commissioner would like to retain flexibility to be able to take advantage of economic opportunities as they arise, and also to use this money in the best possible way.
Senator Bonner?
Mr. Chair, Ms. Gauthier, I guess one of the concerns I would have is, for example, as I read all of this, as I have mentioned, I'm a strong supporter and proponent of farm to school. What if, you know, we pass this out as a policy committee and then for whatever reason the commissioner decides he likes the next gen energy board more, and so that we don't allocate to farm to school? It just seems as though the legislature kind of loses its ability within this framework.
Well, Senator Bonoff, too, I mean, and obviously there's some good discussions, I think. We want to kind of continue to focus on the policy stuff. I mean, these are very good questions, and that's fine. But I think that Senator Tomasoni ultimately will decide some of these budget issues. But I think that your questions are very fair.
Well, Mr. Chair?
Yeah, Senator Bonoff.
So I was actually thinking of it as the policy part. So we're reviewing this policy, and if we as a committee really like this policy, is there some way that we can, as a policy committee, make certain that we – have the chance to say we support that policy.
Okay. Ms. Gauthier?
Mr. Chairman, to your earlier question regarding what if the commissioner decides to do differently, you know, we made this plan after a lot of connection and discussion with stakeholders and some real effort to determine how we could best make an impact as quickly as possible. So this has been distributed widely, and I doubt that the commissioner would change his mind, and I'm sure that were he to do that, there would be opinions about that would be expressed to him.
Okay.
But I do think that I know that we have made projections based on the best information we can gather. We really do feel that these amounts are appropriate for these various activities.
Okay. Mr. Chair, thank you.
Thank you very much for being there. Senator Dames and Senator Weber. Senator Dames.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Ms. Gauthier. Could you tell me on page 10, section 5, the Agriculture Utilization Research Institute, we've inserted new language in there this year. Could you tell me, has somebody talked with ARI about this and see if this language meets their mission statement, or are we going to have two title language? I'm a little concerned that this language might be kind of restricting what they do. Has anybody from your agency talked to them to visit with them about this language?
Ms. Gauthier?
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Senator Dames. No, we have not. We do not get involved in the AURI budget other than it usually gets wrapped into the same physical bill with ours.
Well, that
Senator Dames.
Mr. Chair, that was my assumption, but I see here that we're getting involved in policy by putting language in, so that's what brought it to my attention.
Mr. Chairman, just to be clear, Senator Dames, are you on page 10, lines
10.
11, 12, and 13?
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, that's rider language for the Board of Animal Health's budget, and I don't think I can speak on that. I mean, not Board of Animal Health. I'm sorry. AURI. It's been a long day. Sorry, Mr. Right. Chairman.
Senator Dames.
Mr. Chair and Ms. Gauthier, if you wouldn't mind having someone from your department visit with AURI and see if this language is going to be within the scope of what they need, I would appreciate it.
Thank you, Ms. Gauthier. Is anyone
Mr.
from
Chair, throw this up.
Mr. Knopf?
Mr. Chair, I think I can clear this up. This is again a remnant from the 2009 legislation appropriating money to AURI, and it wasn't in last year's law, so we dropped this rider too. But it's showing up again a couple years later. And so I don't know if the intent of AURI was to keep this rider or not. It doesn't really, it just says it's available for that. It doesn't tie their hands. But I don't, again, 2 years ago, the law did not have this sentence in, but it did in 2009.
Senator Dean.
Well, my concern would be, thank you, Mr. Chair, my concern is that it may tie their hands. It says the money is available for and then lists the purpose it's available for. You know, I would be a little concerned that that might be a little more restricting than what, but as long as we consult with them and...
Mr. Chair, Trump. Usually when we state it in that framework or that manner, it just means that they can use money for that purpose. Okay. It doesn't lock them into the amount of money. But again, when this goes to Senator Tomasoni's committee, when the bill comes out, that committee will likely decide if there are going to be any riders for these agencies. And again, the decision of the committee 2 years ago was to not have a rider like this.
Senator Dames.
Mr. Chair, if I could, and Senator Dames,
Senator Schmidt.
I'll see to it that these conversations happen, that we fix this before its next stop. So thank you for alerting us to this, and we'll make sure we get this fixed.
Okay.
Senator Weber, or Senator Nelson at this point?
Yes.
Senator Nelson.
I'm just curious, what happened in the House on this bill? Have they passed this bill in the House? What's the status of this in the House?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Senator Nelson. The bill was heard in the House Agriculture Policy Committee last Wednesday. It did not pass out of the committee on a tie vote. It is on the agenda to be brought before the committee this coming Wednesday.
Senator Nelson.
Is the language cleaned up?
Gauthier.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Nelson, can you explain a little... which language?
Senator
Nelson.
Mr. Chair. Well, I'm talking about the things that we talked about as far as the eradication of bovine tuberculosis and all those type of things. And I'm just wondering if there were problems in the House over this, how come we didn't see an author's amendment to clean it up here?
Ms. Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Senator Nelson. We do have an author's amendment for this bill that does take care of those riders under the Board of Animal Health. It has not been put on the bill yet.
Senator Nelson.
Would you like me to offer it?
You know, Senator, Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, if I could, we were hoping to save discussion of the appropriations for the appropriate committee in Tomasoni's division. So, we have these items flagged, and they are available in amendment. I'd prefer that we hold off until the next stop to offer that and clean that up.
And Senator Nelson, it's our intention that we're just going to lay this bill on the table today.
Okay.
So if that helps at all.
Yes, it does.
Okay. Senator Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had asked in our previous meeting this afternoon on the Ag in the Classroom, and you had indicated that there's $100,000 a year for each of the next year in the biennium. Now, going to last year's legislation, that was specifically authorized. It is not at least I don't see it in the bill this year. Is that just simply an item that because it was there last year and you've adopted it into the general fund now, is that it at this point?
Ms. Gauthier?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Senator Weber. That is part of our base,
okay.
General fund base budget. It was increased in the 2011 session. So the language that shows up, it would be under the appropriation on page... three, lines 11 and 12, that $3 million appropriation to for the activity of ag marketing and development. It would be incorporated into that. And, of course, you don't see that base item here because the rider language is, I believe, we do have it. I don't think. No, it's part of our base, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Senator.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is that helpful?
Yes.
Thank you. Senator Schmidt.
If there's no other discussion on the bill, I think the plan was to lay it on the table today, and I think we've had a good vetting of this language here today. I appreciate members for their good questions, and thank you.
Thank you very much, Senator Schmidt, and to the members. So we will lay Senate File 845 on the table. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members.
Okay, just to make sure you're... Okay. Let's do it.
Senator Sparks, we have Senate File 1160, Department of Agriculture Policy Bill. If you could proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And before we begin, I believe that the committee page will be passing out an A1 author's amendment. But before we go ahead and take action on that, it's actually a five-page document. And I think what I'd like to have Senate Counsel do is run through that for members before we make a motion on that, if that's okay with you, Mr. Chairman and members.
It is. Thank you, Senator Sparks. Council would like to proceed.
Mr. Chair and members, I'll go briefly through the amendment. I had a discussion with the committee administrator at the end of last week, and there's some technical changes. The first one is deleting Section 3 and then having a new Section 19. Rather than putting some one-time language that only applies to a couple of years in the statute, I thought it'd make more sense to put it as a uncodified section at the end, so you'll see that change. Also, I know the current law does this. It refers to specific rules. I always try to avoid that, so I changed this so it doesn't refer to the specific rule numbers, but rules of the agency that are, or one of the plumbing code. Also, they had a couple of parenthetical abbreviations here that I didn't think were necessary. That's a fairly technical part through 1.10 of the amendment. Now, 1.11 is a little more substantive. What it does is the department's asking to be able to charge a fee for people who prepay their loans back. This right now, you can strike it from the amendment if you want. This right now strikes that from the bill. That was a discussion I had with the committee administrator late last week. And it's included now, but again, on 1.11, if the department or if you're convinced to keep that in the bill, you wouldn't want to move that part of the amendment. Section 19 is this new section I was talking about that replaced Section 3. The only technical is on 1.13. We should add the word 2013. There was a minor change to this a couple hours ago to add 2013 in there. So just on 1.13 in the head note there to add 2013. And then, Mr. Chair, The bigger change in here is Article 2. This is the Minnesota Agricultural Water Quality Program. The department brought in some language on this, and I was reviewing it over the weekend and thought it needed some revision and some updating. And it was a little awkward in places and wasn't clear in places. The first one is a new Section 1 from what they came in with. This would put something in the Data Practices Act that says that the data on persons certified would be governed by the section in the bill that does that. This is a kind of a standard practice that they this will get you ready for the Judiciary Committee. And then Section 2 on the purpose, I took out some acronyms and tried to make that very clear about how it works. In Section 3 on the definitions, they had a restriction, a 10-year provision within the certification that really shouldn't be in the definitions. I put it later on. I also added the application on lines 2.9 to 2.10, and also just to define program. It was used kind of throughout, so on 2.29 to 2.30, I added a definition of program. On the certification instrument, again, we spell out the agencies and how they're involved in this process. And again, I tried not to do anything to this part of the bill that was of any substantive nature, but just to clarify the language. Generally, these next two sections are, I just clarified some pieces. I don't know if there's anything that we really need to go through. There's nothing, no big change in there. Section 6 on the duties of certifying agent, we made clear when the commissioner, if you look, and I think this is actually a suggestion from the agency that I received on Friday, on 4.6 to 4.9, this clearly spells out when a person's going to contest a commissioner's decision, what the process that they go through the Office of Administrative Hearings. And then the certification procedures, again, this just, there were a couple of, there were a number of word changes I needed to make in here. This is where I put in this was in the definition before on 4.14. A certification is valid for up to 10 years as long as it maintains compliance with original certification practices. And then in Section 8, there was some concern about whether or not it's the federal government required something for the legislature enacted or worked in another law. So it says unless required by the legislature or by the federal government. So to make it clear that we're only talking about state agency rules and not any other rules. And that's the big change there. I want to make sure that the department gets a chance to see these. And they will have other stops for this bill to see it. Audits, I kind of left alone. Data privacy, left alone. Again, I just added that section at the beginning. And the reports, again, it was really more just cleaning up the language on these things. Now, this does not have the rulemaking provision. It's my understanding there was some concern about the number of stops this bill would have to go to. It's already got a stop in judiciary. And the question is whether it has to go to state and local government. And with rulemaking, it's by Senate rule that it has to go to that committee. So by taking that out, it doesn't automatically send it. You've got a couple of other things in here that could lead you there. And then the financial assistance, again, that was kind of cleared up. And then in the there's Article 3 of this is the changes to the noxious weed law. And if you look on page of the bill, on page, well, it starts on the bottom of page 17 and goes to page 18. There's these categories of noxious weeds. And in here right now, it just said, for the purposes of this section, which didn't really make a lot of sense to me, the commissioner has powers to designate, commissioner of agriculture, noxious weeds. And it seemed to me that what we're doing here is trying to lay out what the categories of that designation is. So this just makes it abundantly clear, is that when the commissioner designates a noxious weed, it's under these categories that are laid out in the law. And I think that this is pretty standard. It's not the, the categories are the same as generally they use under current law. If you look on the department's website, you'll see the same categories. And then also on the, I did clear up a little bit on the disposal purposes on the last, Section 9. And so those are the changes in the amendment. I just want to make sure everybody was clear before they voted on it.
Well, thank you, Mr. Knopf. Senator Sparks, do you have anything to add to the A1 amendment?
If the department would like to comment, that would be fine. Otherwise, I would thank Senate Counsel for putting a lot of work and effort into this amendment.
Okay. Well, if there's no discussion with the committee, do we have further discussion on the A1 amendment?
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak to that amendment, if that's what we're doing right now.
Yes, please.
All right, great. I'm going to have a couple different things, but I'm going to let Mr. Stoddard, Dan Stoddard, who is Assistant Director of our Pesticide and Fertilizer Management Division and has been working on the certification program, speak to some of the changes in Article 2 that are outlined in the amendment.
Very well. Thank you. Mr. Stoddard?
Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Dan Stoddard. I'm Assistant Director of the Pesticide and Fertilizer Management Division at the Department of Ag. And honestly, I guess I'm going to need a little time to look through this, but what I've looked through so far initially, it seems like those changes were clarifying and probably beneficial, at least not detrimental to our intent.
Well, if there's no other discussion at this time, perhaps we could move the A1 amendment and move on with discussion of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There is one other item in the delete all that Mr. Knopf referred to, page 1, line 11 of the delete all. Deputy Commissioner Jim Borboom would like to speak to that.
Yes, sir. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Jim Borboom, Deputy Commissioner with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. I just want to fully understand the amendment, the 1.11, line 1.11, what the intent of that amendment was. For the Rural Finance Authority, it is critical or essential that we have the option to exercise the option of a prepayment penalty, and I'd be happy to explain more about the rationale for that.
Mr. Borboom, just in discussions with staff, with the chair, I mean, the current law says that you have to allow them to prepay without a penalty. And the question is, this is a fairly significant change for people. I mean, most people in their mortgage can prepay it, or most any loan you have in the state. And so the question is why the department needs this authority.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I'd be, and members of the committee again, Jim Borboom, I would be happy to answer the rationale for the request. At the time that the legislature authorized the restructure loan program, it was done under some very adverse economic conditions in the mid-80s, and many of the farm real estate values at that time, the debt of the loan on the land exceeded the value of the land, and so it was an intent of the legislature to make sure that a farmer who, again, had debt that exceeded the value of the land was not subject to a prepayment penalty. One of the realities or the source of funds for the Minnesota Rural Finance Authority is the sale of general obligation bonds. And the RFA has an obligation to repay the debt service on those general obligation bonds. So we sell bonds, or the Minnesota Management and Budget sells bonds on our behalf. They are sold for like a 7-year term or 5-year term. The loans that we place on the books or underwriter for a 10-year term, and when a borrower prepays a loan after 1 year or 2 years of closing the loan and all of a sudden prepays the loan, then the Rural Finance Authority is not able to realize the interest on that loan, and we're left then still trying to meet the debt service on the bonds without the interest earnings on the loan participation. This is a common practice in the banking industry, and we have this option on all the other loan programs, all the other participation programs for the Rural Finance Authority, so we're just asking for the same consideration on this one.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Horbaum. Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair, how many folks take advantage of the prepayment option?
And
you don't have to give me like a number, but percentage, is it a regular occurrence?
Mr. Horbaum?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman and Senator, it's not a common occurrence. Quite honestly, in the last 3 fiscal years, we've probably written anywhere from 15 to 25 restructure loans. So it's not a high loan volume. It's about $4 million a year. I'd say maybe 5% of our loans are prepaid.
Okay. Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair, and Senator Sparks, you'll do what you want with this, but I certainly appreciate what's in the A1, because it doesn't philosophically, it's just inconsistent with common practice that, you know, in the consumer marketplace where you have a prepayment penalty, and I always think we want to encourage people to get rid of their debt as fast as they can, because anyone who's carrying debt, it kind of weighs on them. And so to have a penalty for prepayment, to me, is inconsistent with the direction that I would think is appropriate, but again, it sounds like there's something different here, so we, of course, defer to you.
Mr. Chair and Senator Bonoff, and again, this is still a work in progress. Obviously, I understand that the Rural Finance Authority does a lot of wonderful work around the entire state, and so I think that our intent today maybe would be to put this amendment on the bill. We're going to lay the bill over, and we'll certainly have continued discussions, but I appreciate these folks bringing this to our attention.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Sparks. We have a motion to adopt the A1 amendment. This is Senator Sparks' bill. If there's no further discussion on the amendment, all those in favor of amending Senate File 1160, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say nay. And the amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And then in the interest of time, I think we'll turn it over to Ms. Gauthier, who's had a busy day today. But I think between her and some of the other folks at the Department of Ag, we'll walk through the policy bill and be happy to answer questions as we go along.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Sarah Nelson.
I have one question. I might have missed it. I know we amended the A1 to include 2013. So is it the amended A1 that we just passed, or did we adopt adding 2013 into line 1.13?
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Knapp,
Senator Nelson, I was thinking I was just a technical. I was adding that to the amendment as kind of for Senator Sparks to just incorporate.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure. I just didn't hear it. Okay,
thank you,
Senator.
Thank you,
Senator Sparks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What we would like to do, we have a. Couple of people here to walk through different parts of the bill to give you an opportunity to ask questions. So what I'm going to do is turn it over first to John Peckham from our department to talk about some of the changes in the pesticide statutes that are in Article 1 of our bill.
Mr. Chairman?
Please. If you could state your name for the record.
Sure. My name is John Peckham. I'm the manager of our inspection and enforcement section in the Pesticide and Fertilizer Management Division. If I could draw your attention to lines 3.3 to 3.6, we are adding a definition for a bulk pesticide storage facility in 18 B01. There currently is no definition, and we're wanting to add that to ensure that only people that are required to comply with the permitting requirements have to do so. And if there were no other questions there, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'll move on to the next section then.
Thank you, Mr. Peckham. I don't see any questions, so
all
please
right.
Proceed.
The A1 amendment did address the issues in 3.30 to 4.2, which were the issues with the waste pesticide collection and counties needing to keep records. What the amendment does is it eliminates the record-keeping requirement for those cooperators and counties, and then it also compels the department to evaluate data on its past waste pesticide collection for the last 4 years, and then by January 15 to give a report to the legislature regarding this issue.
And Mr. Chairman, if I may, this was a request of the Association of Minnesota Counties, and we worked with them on this. The collection of the data is a cost item for them, and we have been collecting it since the groundwater protection bill back in 1989 required us to start doing that. And so we are going to analyze how much this data is used and pull together a bunch of stakeholders to determine if this is something that we could do in a more cost-efficient way.
Okay. Thank you. Members, any questions at this time? All right. Senator Sparks, do you have anything else to add at this moment?
Yes.
Oh, sure. Mr. Peckham?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'll draw your attention next to lines 4.3 to 4.7. What we're doing is correcting something that's been in statute for quite a number of years where it talks about just application sites, and that's actually applied to any site. And what we're doing there is just striking the word at application sites, and we're adding an open drain issue with that section. We want to make sure that pesticides aren't stored in an area where product can leave the site. Section 4.8, or lines 4.8 to 4.23, and the Sparks A1 amendment address the issues that existed with the naming out of the backflow prevention devices. For those of you who don't know what those are, the health department rules, as Mr. Knopf said, clearly outline what those are. We also added a provision regarding cross connections between water supplies for pesticide application equipment, for filling, And then we wanted to make sure that we did not apply this section to the filling of aquatic pesticide application equipment on lakes. Obviously, that's where the product goes. And we could entertain questions on that part, or I can move to the next part.
Members, any questions at this point? Mr. Peckham, please proceed.
All right. Lines 4.24 through 5.4. There we are essentially folding two sections in, or excuse me, not folding two sections in. We're making sure that we address the issue of pesticide handling. And the language is pretty much the same, except we've added drains and sewers into the area. And we're basically saying a person cannot fill, clean, unload, or park application equipment in an area where it could contaminate groundwater and surface water. There are some setbacks in the well code, and I don't know, if, Mr. Knopf, if you thought that that should be changed as well. I mean, that would be another one of those areas that could be added to. And...
Mr. Beckham, I think that's been addressed in the amendment, I believe.
Was it? Okay. Excuse me.
But thanks anyhow.
Yeah. Sure.
Please proceed.
All right. And then I want to make sure I've got the last few ones here. Lines 5.5 through.
Excuse me. Yes, Senator Dames.
Before Mr. Beckham goes on, thank you, Mr. Chair. In the language, it refers to wells, setback. Is established in the rules, but how about the other areas? Do you have any suggestions or any guidelines that should be followed for these other areas?
In the other areas, excuse me, Mr. Chairman,
Mr.
Senator, in the other areas, the pesticide labels often dictate what those setbacks are, so that's where we would get those. There's nothing in statute or rule that would necessarily cover that. So,
thank you.
Right. Excuse me. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, lines 5.5, and we go all the way to 7.16 in 18B16. What we're trying to do in this section is ensure that we do not collect monies that we end up having to reimburse or refund to individuals who have overpaid. It is extremely costly to refund fees when we've overpaid. All righty. And then, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we start on line 7.17, and we can actually go to 9.8. In all of those subdivisions, subdivision 1, 3, 4, 8, and 9 of 18B316, all relate to just changing the definition in this, or the word in the statute, from distributed to offer for sale. Distribution has a very extensive meaning, and we wanted to make sure that people who were not required to comply with this part did not have to comply. Mr. Chairman, Senators, if there's any questions on that part, I can move to the last section.
Mr. Peckham, I don't see any questions at this point, so please proceed.
All right. Lines, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, lines 9.9 through 9.18. This is a clarification of what this plan is that folks actually have to put together. It's been... improperly worded for quite some time, and actually what we're trying to get at is what happens in the event of an incident, which is defined in statute. And so all we're doing is saying the plan has to be an incident plan versus a storage handling incident response and disposal plan, and we're saying that the plan can be kept on our forms. And in addition to that, I know we had a question from industry on this. Could the plan be electronic? And we agree that it can be electronic doesn't specifically say that. It just says must contain the same information as forms provided by the commissioner.
Sure.
So that, Mr. Chairman, members, is all I had on those sections.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just please finish up the remaining sections that have not been covered in Article 1. So I will have to direct your attention back to Section 1 on page 1 and going over to page 2, line 2.35 through to 3.2. This is language pertaining to our livestock investment grant program, and it is confusing language and difficult for us to implement. We would like to just strike this and work along the lines of a calendar year rather than having to calculate for people applying for the grants that the 6 months preceding the first day of the current fiscal year, et cetera, et cetera. It was written for specific purposes back several years ago, and those purposes no longer exist. So that's okay. That part.
Well, thank you.
Then directing your attention, Mr. Chairman, back to page 9, line 19, Commissioner Duties. This pertains to the Organic Advisory Task Force, and it's mainly a technical to change the requirement there on line 10.13 from three farmers using organic agriculture methods to three organic farmers. Now that we do have a clear definition federally and state about what an organic farmer is, we'd like to just clean the statute up there. Section 15 on line 11.5 deals with the Next Gen Energy Board. This would continue the Next Gen Energy Board through the fiscal year 14 until June 30th, 2015. On line 11.7, section 16, this deals with the Agri Fund, the Agricultural Growth Research and Innovation that you just heard a presentation on. And this would allow us or add a new section that would allow the department to look at two- and three-year grants rather than just single year. And that it would put in a requirement that if we did decide to make a 2- to 3-year grant, we would reevaluate every year. Section 17 has been deleted.
Senator Dames?
Mr. Chair, Ms. Guthier, what would happen in a case to where you make a 3-year grant and in the next biennium the money is not awarded?
Mr. Chairman. Guthier. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Senator Dames. This language would pertain to the grants that are already made. So what this would be is the money that is granted out in the current biennium. If someone applies to that program and is awarded a grant, for example, for 3 years, then the grant would be made and the money would be in our budget to pay that person until such time as they complete the stipulations of their grant contract with us. So it wouldn't have a carryover into the next biennium.
Yes.
Resuming, Mr. Chairman, on 11.12, Section 17 has been deleted by the amendment. And, Mr. Chairman, Section 18 and Section 19 are cleanups from legislation in the 2012 session. We did a major restructuring of our grain statutes and consolidated them, streamlined, clarified, and it involved numerous chapters of statute and statutes dating back to the 1930s. At any rate, Sections 18 and 19 were a couple of connections that inadvertently did not get made, and so we'd like to put those technical connections in here. I do have people here who can speak to the details of that if you would like.
Not necessary at this point.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And please proceed.
Yep. On 1220 there, Section 20 is E85. This amendment is, this language, Mr. Chairman, was something that the Department of Agriculture, the Department of Commerce, and the Department of Revenue worked on over the interim with the Minnesota Petroleum Retailers Association, and also with some other stakeholders pertaining to Minnesota law being in conformance with federal law in terms of reference to the correct standards. Our current law, for purposes of labeling E85 and for purposes of tax issues that may come up with people who are selling E85 and want to participate in various tax credit programs, we need to make sure that our definition of E85 is the same as the federal's definition. And so we were referring down on 1227 there, we were referring to a standard from 07, the D5798 standard from 2007. A new standard was issued in 2011, and the feds have adopted that as their definitional standard, and so we would just do the same thing here to conform. Mr. Chairman, there's some instructions to the reviser, and then the repealer, Mr. Chairman. We do need to do a little bit of work on that, but we will work with the chairman and, our author, since this bill is being laid on the table. That would complete Article 1.
Thank you, Ms. Gauthier. Any questions at this point from members? Or if you can proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know exactly how you want to proceed at this point. We do have a presentation in the handout, a second PowerPoint in that packet on the Minnesota Agriculture Water Quality Certification Program, which is a new initiative of the department this year. Some of it was just rewritten in your amendment, but I think the general concepts are still the same. So if you would like, I have Dan Stoddard here to walk through just to familiarize members with this new program.
I think that'd be helpful. Mr. Stoddard, if you could give us at least the highlights and use your discretion. you can provide us with as much information as you'd like. So
thank you, Mr. Chair. In the interest of time, I'll try to zip through it pretty quick, and then we'll be available for questions. But
thank you.
This is a new program. We're very excited about it. The vision is to it's going to be a voluntary program to accelerate the adoption of voluntary best management practices to help address agricultural non-point source contamination. It was initiated last year, about a little over a year ago, with a formal memorandum of agreement between the Governor Dayton and the Secretary of the Environmental Protection Agency and Secretary Vilsack of the USDA. So it's a very high-level start, something that's unprecedented in the country. The MOU basically supports the concept that the state will take the leadership in this project, and that we would have an advisory committee which would form to provide us advice. It also identifies the concept of recognition for growers who are following appropriate practices and certainty from certain liabilities. And to prioritize future funding. We have a very tight timeline to try to keep this moving. There's already been funding that's been made available from USDA to through EQIP to implement some of the practices. We have completed the process with our advisory committee already. And the advisory committee had a number of unanimous recommendations. We're very, very pleased with the process and with their recommendations, and it's our intent to follow through with as many of those recommendations as we practically can. The advisory committee came up with 7 sets of recommendations. One is on pilot projects. The second is program operations, a measurement tool, data management, providing certainty, incentives, and promotion. One of the very important concepts here is that this is going to take a while to put together. So the advisory committee recommended that we start this as a pilot, and they recommended a 3-year period for a pilot project. So we very strongly endorse that. While we have a lot of good feedback from the advisory committee, it is going to take a while to sort through some of the options. So that's really important for the whole rest of the presentation. There's going to be 5 general steps under program options. One is an assessment tool, which is made available to anyone so any grower can review to see how they're doing score-wise, and then they may choose to participate or not. And then the program also has technical assistance so that if they need some additional support to qualify, they will get it. Then there is a formal process for certification and for licensing certifiers, and the certification will not be done by the department. And then there will be a process for audits and verification just to make sure everything is on board, and then a process for recertification. I'm just going to kind of zip through the rest really quick. One of the key tools or key concepts is what is certainty. The vision is that farmers will be following a very high standard of practice, and therefore they will be recognized as meeting their contributions to any targeted reductions of pollutants during the period of certification. What that means is that as an agency should go into rulemaking, they would keep that recognition that growers are already meeting any targeted contributions as they were to develop any future rules. The next steps, we have to start the pilot projects. We have done kind of an RFP process to identify watersheds that are interested in participating. Those were due March 1st, so we'll be screening those and selecting the pilots. Then we have to, the pilot watersheds. Then we have to develop the measurement tool, which is in process right now, and then we're going to start the pilot projects in those selected watersheds. So that's a very brief overview, but I'm available for any questions.
All right. Well, thank you, sir. Do you have any questions among the committee here?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Dames.
And I apologize for not having the gentleman's name that just was testifying, but I do have some questions. I've had a lot of calls and a lot of emails in concern about this particular program. And those concerns are coming from the agricultural community. They're coming from soil and water resource community. And they're really concerned about where this thing is going. And it's, you know, we say now it's voluntary, but you also alluded to, you know, it's kind of a 3-year pilot program. What is being done to try to eliminate some of that concern? And is it the intention that this is going to become a program that everybody's going to be required to participate in the agricultural community?
Mr. Chair, Senator.
From
the very beginning of this process, we have been emphatic that this is now and always will be a voluntary program. From our agency's perspective and with the endorsement of other agencies, there is no intent, and we will try to structure it so that it will never be a regulatory program. And then I think there are a lot of issues to be worked through, and so I understand a lot of the questions that are arising. We're going to have to work through the pilot. I think the steering committee process was very positive. We liked the recommendations they came up with. The recommendations were unanimous, which was really kind of a surprise to us. And so that's our intent, is to move forward with the pilot to evaluate the steering committee recommendations and test a few different ways of executing. But there are a lot of details that need to be worked through, and I know that they do raise a lot of questions.
Thank you, Mr. Stoddard. And Senator Dames, in the amendment that was adopted previously, we do specify that this program is voluntary.
I understand that, but I also understand that over a period of time, voluntary can change to mandatory.
Sure. Any other questions at this time? All right. Senator Sparks, anything further you'd like to say, your testifiers?
That will take care of Article 2. Then maybe Ms. Gauthier can help with Article 3.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Stoddard.
Mr. Chairman, I will quickly take you through Article 3, which are some updates and clarifications to the Minnesota Noxious Weed Law. In 2009, the legislature set up a Noxious Weed Advisory Committee. That committee has been meeting and giving really helpful advice to the commissioner. One of the things the committee did is they decided to go back through all of our noxious weed statutes and modernize them and clarify them. Some of these statutes date back to not the last century, but the century before that, the 1800s, Mr. Chairman. And I think they've probably been updated since then, but they needed another refresher. There are two, most of these are very minor. There are two that are of some substance, and I will quickly go through those. The first is Section 5, Noxious Weed Categories. And thank you to Mr. Knopp for that amendment that is on line 1726. That's very helpful. The committee, the Noxious Weed Advisory Committee, decided that it would be helpful for the stakeholders in the noxious weed arena to have more clarification in the statute about the different types of noxious weeds. So that's what this section does. It talks about weeds that have to be controlled or eradicated, which are called prohibited noxious weeds under this, and it sets up the noxious weed eradicate list and the noxious weed control list on the next page. Then it talks about restricted noxious weeds and specially regulated plants, and county noxious weeds. So kind of trying to separate out into different categories so that, you know, there's different management strategies for each. For some of these, if we're going to eradicate, we would take different steps than if we were looking to manage them. The other substantive change is toward the end. sections 10 and 11. 10 is the duties of the Noxious Weed Advisory Committee, and they wanted to increase the scope or expand the scope of their duties to include advising the commissioner on implementation of the law, and the commissioner is fine with that recommendation. And they also wanted to expand their membership to add the Minnesota Association of County Land Commissioners on page 21, line 1. Perhaps I should also speak to Section 9, Mr. Chair, as this is something that the department worked on with metro area counties. Section 9 pertained to transportation of the propagating parts of noxious weeds. Under current law, if those parts were transported, for example, if you pulled a noxious weed up in your yard and transported it to a county compost site, if you technically, under current law, you would need a permit to do that from the county. Well, the metro area county said that that was a difficulty and not very efficient. So we worked with them to come up with language that's on page 19.31, which says that no one needs to get a permit for transport of for the purposes of destroying propagating parts, as long as they are doing it at an approved site, and those sites will end up being sites that we publish a list of and put on our website. It says as long as the materials are covered or sealed in a bag. So if you're cleaning out your garden and you come across something, you put it in a plastic bag before you take it there and then take it out of the bag when you get to the compost site. That would be permissible. And the counties, we're going to be working with them to educate homeowners about how to do that. But that's basically that change. The rest are very technical, Mr. Chairman. But we have people here who can answer those questions if you would like.
Well, thank you, Ms. Gauthier. Any questions from the committee regarding Articles 1 through 3? All right.
I think Mr. Power is here, Mr. Chair, just to add support for Article 3. If you'd like to hear from him, maybe just make a few brief comments, if that's okay.
Mr. Power, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tim Power. I'm the Interim Government Affairs Director for the Minnesota Nursery and Landscape Association, and I'd just like to speak to the spirit of Article 3. I actually sit on the Noxious Weed Advisory Committee representing MNLA, and we really like the idea of getting these category descriptions into statute. There is one other item that appears quite inconsequential, and that is the repealer. The repealer includes a repeal of a sunset clause. Our committee would cease to exist on June 30th of 2013. Mm-hmm. I believe that our work can and should be ongoing. If an additional sunset clause is preferred, going out a ways would be very helpful. But I believe that we're doing good work and would like to be able to continue. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Power. Thank you, Ms. Gauthier. Any questions? If not, we will proceed with laying this on the table. And thank you for your testimony and for the good questions among the committee. Thank you, Senator Sparks.
Chairman.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members.
All right. And up next, members, we have our fourth and final bill of the day here, Senate File 1288. Senator Sparks, whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senate File 1288 deals with the Next Gen Energy Board. We heard some discussion about that earlier. And again, this just makes a simple change to allow for some additional ideas to be formulated through that committee. And I'm just going to turn over to the two testifiers because I know we're running kind of late here this evening. But with that, I'll turn it over to Ms. Billick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Amanda Billick. I am an energy policy specialist with the Great Plains Institute. The Great Plains Institute is an independent, nonpartisan, nonprofit organization focused on the transition to a sustainable and low-carbon energy system. I'm also here representing the Bioeconomy Coalition of Minnesota. This is an alliance of bio-based chemical, advanced biofuel, agricultural, and environmental groups that support policy reform to grow Minnesota's bio-based industries. I think included in your packet there should be a handout about the coalition, which also includes the members listed on the back. I do have copies the page could distribute if those are not in the packet. And I also was appointed by Governor Dayton to serve on the Next Gen Energy Board. So the Next Gen Board was created in 2006, and current law designates that the purpose of the board is to examine policies and opportunities for the state to most efficiently achieve energy independence, agricultural and natural resource sustainability, and rural economic vitality. Additional language directs the board activities to consider how best to take advantage of Minnesota's abundant agricultural and forestry feedstocks for renewable fuels and the development of bioenergy resources for electricity and thermal production. The bill before you would just add bio-based chemicals to the scope of the board. And why is this change necessary? So Minnesota has within its borders a world-leading cluster of bio-based chemical headquarter companies. You'll be hearing from one in just a minute. And on this handout is a map that includes all of the companies that are currently have operations in Minnesota. These companies specialize in using agricultural and forestry feedstocks to produce base chemicals that can replace petroleum as a source material for a variety of consumer products and industrial supplies, such as plastics, detergents, resins, coatings, and cosmetics. Adding bio-based chemicals to the scope of the NextGen board is an incremental step towards demonstrating support and helping this new industry sector, and also provides an opportunity to examine growth strategies that will take advantage of integrating bio-based chemical production. The addition of bio-based chemicals in the scope fits perfectly within the broader statutory purpose for the board of achieving energy independence, agricultural and natural resource sustainability, and rural economic vitality. So today we have before us the opportunity to make this addition this year and then send a signal to these companies that Minnesota wants to take full advantage of the feedstock and economic development potential of growing the industry here. Thank you for your time, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thanks, Ms. Bielek. Any questions at this time? All right. There's some additional testimony here.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir. If you could state your name for the record.
Absolutely. My name is Andrew Skinner. I'm the Vice President of Operations for Sagetis, a biochemical development company based here in Minneapolis, actually in Golden Valley. We are in the business of doing research and development to take agricultural feedstocks, such as those readily available here in Minnesota, and turning them into important chemicals for our society. And we're replacing some chemicals of concern on the EPA list, such as phthalates for plasticizers and other bio-based chemicals like glycol ethers and whatnot that are preferred to be made from these biomaterials. The legislation before you would help Sagetis pushing forward these development programs and these research programs and employ others in the state of Minnesota. We've been here about 5 years. We currently employ 26 people, and grants from this program would help us employ others in the state of Minnesota.
All right, well, thank you, Mr. Skinner. Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sparks, and testifiers, this area is very important to my community. They have a strong proponent, you know, a lot of bio, bio-based chemical production in my district. And for example, BioAmber, while you've got the little diagram as being in the northern part of the state, is in Plymouth.
Yes.
So in my district, and Cargill's in my district. So just wanted to speak out for in support of this and talk. Really, it is very important for economic growth and development in our state.
Mr. Chair and Senator Bonoff, I couldn't have said it any better. I think that we heard from Mr. Skinner and some of the exciting things that are going on, so I think this will allow us to stay on the cutting edge, and we really can use this as an economic development tool as well as having some value added with our agriculture industry as well.
All right. Well, very good. Thank you, Senator Sparks. Thank you, testifiers. If there are no additional questions at this time, I'd lay this bill on the table, and we can adjourn. So thank you.
Interesting.